first time I taught on Judson was in Holland, Michigan. And I got through it in one lesson. And 18 months ago, I taught it again in Grand Rapids. And I split it in half from after his imprisonment to the end of his life was the second study. And I started studying to teach it again, and I'm going to teach it in three lessons, Lord willing, 2 weeks from today. My goal is to spend an entire Sunday school looking at his imprisonment, which at the time his biographer said is probably one of the saddest chronicles in missionary history. Well, since then, of course, you have the story of Tortured for Christ by Richard Wurmbrand, which is harrowing in the extreme as he suffered under communist Romania. But I was listening, as I usually do, to other people's teaching on Judson to see if I could glean anything I haven't heard before. And I listened to two lessons, and one of the teachers, a Reformed Baptist down in, I think, Louisiana, didn't even cover his imprisonment. So what I'm going to tell you in that story is very unique. And I'm going to go into real detail, and the reason is because we know there are people amongst us who are suffering, and there are things to learn from that. And we're going to go into such detail between Henry Gouger, who talks about what it was like in the prison, and Ann Judson, who wrote to L. Nathan, Adoniram's brother, about what was outside of prison. And we're going to go into such detail, you're going to feel like you can smell the place. So anyway, Judson was born in the town of Malden, Massachusetts on August 9th, 1788. His father was a congregational minister, really pretty strict, respectable talents and theological attainments. And at the time, there was already a spiritual coldness and decay among the churches of the standing order, but he was very, very committed, and he raised his son very well. They had three children, and Adoniram was, I believe, the oldest. He had one child that never survived, but in his young years, Adoniram had suffered a great deal of illness, but after he recovered, after his 15th year, he went to what was then Providence College in Rhode Island, which is now Brown University. And although he entered as a sophomore, because he was unusually intelligent. In fact, while his father was away and Adoniram was 3 years old, his mother thought she would surprise his father, whose name was also Adoniram, by teaching him to read the Bible at three. So when his father came home, he read a chapter of the Bible to his dad at the age of three. He entered into college as a sophomore, and though he had the disadvantage of being behind, his unflagging diligence soon placed him in the foremost mark. He graduated a valedictorian. But, however, the college was being affected by the infidelity that was surrounding them at the time. Between the infidelity of Thomas Paine and his Age of Reason, and so Judson had made friends, very good friends, with a young student named Jacob Eames. Remember the name, Jacob Eames. There was something so grand, so captivating in this idea of a new age of reason in which universal freedom was to be ushered in by emancipation from all old restraints of what they called priestcraft and superstition. That's their view now of the Christian religion. And Adoniram gave his valedictorian address, and it was subdued, so his dad did not yet know of his infidelity. So the tempter came, moreover, in a disguise best adapted to full suspicion. And the class next above Judson was a young man by the name of Jacob Eames, to whom he was drawn by the strongest affinity of tastes, and who admitted him, though of inferior college rank, to his closest intimacy. So they got along very well. Obviously, Adoniram would have been drawn to somebody who was very intellectually superior to other classmates, but that's what led him into his deist principles. Well, he got out of college and he was a teacher himself. He had started a school, but at 20, he closed the school in order to commence a tour on horseback through the northern states. His departure from his father's house was marked by painful circumstances. He crushed his father's heart by telling him he had become a deist. And his dad was quite strict, which Ed and Iron was more easily able to dismiss than the tears of his mother, because he broke her heart, her bitter grief and her humiliation. But he wanted to tour the Northeast and New York. He had taken an opportunity before leaving home of disclosing his infidel sentiments to his father. The blow seems to have fallen on the excellent man wholly without preparation, and it awoke all the emotions of disappointed pride, injured affection, and pious grief, not unmixed with anger, which might be expected from his character. But he took off. He wanted to explore the New England states. He had a horse. His father gave it to him. He begged him as an inheritance, please, can I have a horse? And he left it at his uncle's house in Sheffield, Massachusetts, because he wanted to experience a Fulton steamer. Was a brand new boat, actually on its second trip down the Hudson River. And Adoniram was aware of it, and he really was interested in taking a trip on this boat, a trip rich with pleasure to a sensitive and cultivated mind. In addition to the general objects of this visit to New York, Judson had a special errand, that of acquainting himself thoroughly with the theater and the regulations of the stage in case he should conclude to adopt dramatic authorship as his profession. In other words, he wanted to write stage plays. As he carried out his plan of independent action and free practical inquiry during this journey, he had not been able wholly to escape the admonitions of conscience, his mother's tears. His father's admonitions were crying in his ears. He couldn't escape it totally. Though firmly maintaining the deistic opinions to which, as he imagined, he had been led by candor and love of truth, he could not forget that the disclosure of them had planted sharp thorns in the hearts of his revered parents. Their sorrowful and downcast looks at parting haunted him wherever he went. But he went to New York. He was only there about 5 weeks. And he returned to Sheffield after that expedition to get his horse so that he could head west and explore that. And as he got to his uncle's house, his uncle wasn't there. There was a visiting minister, a young clergyman, supplying the pulpit in his uncle's absence. Now, it isn't said whether this young man really understood the apostasy of Adoniram. He did sense that he wasn't a Christian. But this young man, unlike his Adoniram's father, was very gentle and persuasive, and Adoniram was quite affected by their conversation. This tender, gentle earnestness greatly affected him. Under this softening influence, he left his uncle's house and pursued his journey through one day, but he couldn't get to his destination, and he ended up stopping at a country tavern. As the landlord showed him to his room, he apologized for placing him next door. This is the only room he has, he said, to a young man who he feared was in a dying condition. But Adoniram put on these airs. He was too proud to show that he was emotional about it at all, and with a stoicism, which we must believe was more than half assumed, Judson assured him with an expression of pity for the sufferer, that as far as he was concerned, the proximity to the dying man in the next room was a matter of entire indifference. But his philosophy, his belief system, in order for him to feed his pride, you have to have witnesses. You have to have people that are stirring you on. But in the sounds through the night and nobody around, Judson couldn't, in fact, sleep. The sounds from the sick room fastened on his ear and suggested the most agitating reflections. Was the dying man prepared for the change which awaited him? He blushed as he felt the prejudices of childhood again creeping over him. He was eaten up with pride. He couldn't give in to these emotions. What would his friend Jacob Eames, the deist, the infidel, think if he saw this weakness in him? But still, the question would return, and what scenes is his spirit about to pass? The landlord has spoken of him as a young man. Was he like the faithful friend whose warnings of yesterday were yet fresh in his mind? The young pastor at his uncle's house in Sheffield. Was he a Christian or like himself a skeptic, the source of unutterable sorrow and anxiety to pious parents? What were the feelings of the dying youth in this testing hour? But then the day came and the cheerful dawn banished these midnight specters as by a spell, light coming into the windows of his room and so on, and he shook himself and said, I don't know what was bothering me last night. But he ran down to meet the landlord and inquired after the sick man. He's dead, was the reply. Dead? Yes, he is gone, poor fellow. The doctor thought he could not survive the night. Do you know his name? Oh, yes, he was from Providence College, a fine fellow. His name was Jacob Eames. And Adam Irem was stirred to the core. It says in some biographies he couldn't even leave the place for 4 hours. He was so struck. And the words kept coming to his mind, dead, lost, dead, lost. And all of his infidelity did him no good. He was shook to the core and he gave up his plans and thought, I'll return home. Obviously to greatly relieved parents. Well, I'm not sure if it was right away, but very soon, some visitors came to the Judson house. Because, as I hinted at last week, they were on a mission to let Adoniram Sr. know about the plans to start a college, Andover Seminary, because of what was going on at Harvard, and that was that Henry Ware, who was a theologian at Harvard, was a Unitarian, and these people were stirred up by these things and upset by them, and Gardner Spring's father was one of the persons behind these plans to create a seminary. And so there were two men that had showed up at the place to communicate with Adoniram's father. And I had mentioned one of them as Edward Dorr Griffin, and the other was Moses Stewart of the Andover Theological Seminary. At this time, they visited his father and were made acquainted with the peculiar circumstances of Adoniram's case, because his father right now was concerned about his son, because he was really agitated. He was in between his thoughts of deism and the Christian principles that he had been taught. But these two men noticed a good deal of genius in this young man. And in talking to his father, they thought they would make a special case where they will take him as a student. Though the rules of the new seminary was a person had to show some evidences of personal piety, they brought him in an awakened state. And at first he wasn't going to come, but he had been visiting someplace and came across Thomas Boston's Human Nature in its Fourfold State. And in reading it, it brought more conviction upon him, and he decided to go to Andover and entered as a special student on the regular course of theological study with the middle class. So, bring in Leonard Woods, which, as I hinted again last week, there was some controversy between biographies, whether it was Moses Stewart, who was a very intelligent man, or Leonard Woods, who was called the Abbott Professor of Theology. The reason they have the name Abbott was because he was the person who donated a good deal of funds to get the seminary started, and Leonard Woods was brought on board, and he was really some intellect. Well, as I was studying further this week and confirming that it was my belief that this guy was more than Adoniram's equal to straighten out his deism and answer all of his arguments, I came across a biography that I hadn't seen before, and I believe the author's name was Conant. And interestingly enough, and we'll talk about this in the third lesson, Adoniram Judson had made a trip back to the United States from Burma after his second wife passed away, and came back to the United States and came to a place where he was going to be introduced to an audience, and who should be there but Leonard Woods, who came to visit a relative and was given the initial exhortation to the crowd. And Adoniram stood up after Leonard Woods had talked to the crowd, and he said, "This is the man who I owe so much for bringing me from my infidelity and helping me to become a Christian." So that confirmed my belief, but he is another man who's pretty much unheard of in our day. But while Judson was doing these studies, he came across a sermon by Claudius Buchanan called A Star in the East. In June of 1809, he received the appointment of tutor in Brown University, an honorable testimony to his talents and scholarship, and a fair opening, had he been disposed to accept it, to a career of literary distinction and usefulness. This sermon really affected him. It stirred for the first time in his mind a desire to go to what Courtney Anderson calls the Golden Shore. That's Burma from the view of the ocean. And it got him thinking that way, so much so that sometimes he was having trouble with his studies at Andover. While, however, these things had been going on at Andover, there was also a college I mentioned last week, Williams College, that Edward Dorr Griffin took an interest in and really saved them from extinction. They almost were ready to shut the doors down, but they had so much revived that there were a number of theological students who were at Williams College. And this is a couple of years before. These men had gotten together and they were praying for missions as well. And a thunderstorm arose and they took shelter in the lee of a haystack and continued to pray. And that's why it became called the Haystack Prayer Meeting. And so there's a marker now where they say that this haystack, this area, was the beginning of foreign missions, the prayers of these young men. And at the same time, there was a young man named Samuel Knott pursuing theological studies with his father at Connecticut, who came to Andover. So he was the first to come to Andover and become good friends with Adoniram. And since they both had a desire for missions, they became very good friends. Well, five Williams College students met in the summer of 1806 in a grove of trees near the Hoosac River, then known as Sloan's Meadow, and debated the theology of missionary service. Their meeting was suddenly interrupted by a thunderstorm, and the students, and this is their names, Samuel Mills, James Richards, Francis Robbins, Harvey Loomis, and Byram Green, took shelter under a haystack until the sky cleared. Well, I talked to you about the Connecticut Evangelical Magazine, and I found it interesting that Samuel Mills did not, in fact, go into the mission field, but was one of the editors of that magazine. And Samuel Mills also knew Asa Hell Nettleton, and Nettleton always had a desire to go into foreign missions as well, but suffered from financial embarrassments and wasn't able to get to the place where he could become a missionary. But Samuel Mills was pretty well known by his piety, by the things that he did to help advance missions. So Judson visited Bradford in June of 1810, so these things started to progress, and there was a dinner that people were having to hear from these young students who had such a desire for missions. And there was a young lady there named Anne Hasseltine who was interested in who this young man is, but found it amazing that he would not even look up at her. He was staring at his plate. Little did she know that her presence cast a spell on him, and he was so taken with her that he couldn't think about anything else, and embarrassed, he stared into his plate, but had gotten word a little bit about her personal piety. And I know Lena said that she had read her story. I was rereading it. This was a remarkable young lady. Her journals, her diary, her conversion is very, very interesting. It's a separate story, though, biographies that have been published about Anne. So, to make a long story short, Adoniram got to the place where he wrote to her with permission to court her, and she said that you will, of course, have to ask my parents. And I don't have the letter that he wrote to Anne's mother and father, but it is an amazing request. Are you willing to give up your daughter to the hardships of the missionary field? And it was quite an emotional decision for her. No lady had left the American shores for a mission field, let alone Burma. And she didn't have a lot of people to counsel her, but she was very, very sincere in her Christian piety. In fact, I think she was actually converted because she had come across some writings of Hannah Moore, who was living at that time. And Hannah Moore was talking about the verse, "She that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth." And she became so convicted that she never rested until she had a sincere assurance of salvation. And it was an amazing time of awakening. But to make a long story short, she accepted Adoniram's proposals to her, and eventually they did get married. The parents of Anne said, "It's up to you, Anne, it's your call." And she became very dedicated to him as a wife. And then you had the other missionary persons who were going to embark, and they headed out in two different boats to India. On February 6, 1812, the five missionary brethren being assembled at Salem were solemnly ordained and set apart to the work of preaching the gospel to the heathen. I have, because I have a number of the works of Leonard Woods, the professor, there's a number of his sermons, and I notice that he did the ordination sermon for these men who embarked to a journey to India. So I'm going to back up for a second and tell you another story. When Adoniram had these ambitions, he knew that, because this is such a new idea, America had never sent forth foreign missionaries before, and he worried about whether there would be any funding. And he had written to the London Missionary Society, and they welcomed him to come to talk to them, and he went on a small boat with some people. But the French and England war was going on, and his boat was intercepted, and he was actually captured, made a prisoner, and couldn't speak French. He was in a bind, and he wasn't well, and he's down below in the ship, and there was a doctor on board this ship that waited on him to check on him. And Adoniram, since it was taking a while for anything to be done, was translating a Hebrew Bible into Latin. And the doctor could not speak English. Adoniram couldn't speak French, but he picked up the notes of Adoniram and started talking to him in Latin. And to make a long story short, began to assist him to understand what was going on, that he was an American. He wasn't from England, and he was eventually released, but his desire to get funding from the London Missionary Society, they wanted to help, but by that time, Congregationalists back home looked at their willingness to help and said, "We'll forego that, we'll try to assist you ourselves." And so they headed off, these men, to India, and Adoniram and Anne were newlyweds. This is how they spent their honeymoon. The ordination of these young men excited the liveliest interest, not in Salem alone, but in the whole vicinity. On the appointed day, throngs from all the neighboring places mingled at an early hour with the streams which poured from every quarter of the town towards the tabernacle church. So two vessels were sent off with these missionaries. And one of the men, one of the haystack men, was in the other boat, and his name was Luther Rice. There's now a college named after him, who was a huge proponent of paedobaptism. And Adoniram was on the other ship, and because they were going to India, they knew they were going to see William Carey, and Adoniram had no way of knowing that Luther Rice was studying the same question, infant baptism. And as Adoniram studied more and more, to Anne's dismay, he began to see that the Baptists were right. The Bible definitely talks about immersion. And he became a Baptist. And when he got to India, they arrived at Calcutta on June 17, 1812. While aboard a ship en route to India, he did a focused study on the theology of baptism. He came to the position that believers' baptism was theologically valid and should be done as a matter of obedience to the command of Jesus in Matthew 28:19-20. So he writes a letter to William Carey. To the Reverend Mr. Carey, Marshman, and Ward, these were the men working together. As you have been ignorant of the late exercises of my mind on the subject of baptism, the communication which I am about to make may occasion you some surprise. It is now about 4 months since I took the subject into serious and prayerful consideration. My inquiries commenced during my passage from America, and after much laborious research and painful trial, which I shall not now detail, have issued an entire conviction that the immersion of a professing believer is the only Christian baptism. And he said, eventually, in these studies, I have not been alone. Mrs. Judson has been engaged in a similar examination and has come to the same conclusion. Feeling, therefore, that we are in an unbaptized state, we wish to profess our faith in Christ by being baptized in obedience to his sacred commands. Adoniram Judson. So he switched to the Baptist denomination along with his wife, and they were baptized by immersion in Calcutta by an English missionary associate, a William Carey named William Ward. Well, that is going inevitably to produce a problem, and that is he was going to lose his funding. The congregational churches weren't going to support a man who was now a Baptist. And both the local and British authorities did not want Americans evangelizing Hindus in the area, so that was another problem. So they landed in Calcutta, and they already had this working against them that they were not welcome there. Well, there was a company called the East India, British East India Company, and that company was actually formed under Queen Elizabeth in the early 1600s, maybe the late 1500s. But it had grown so much that it controlled so much of the percentage of the world's commerce, and they had even created an army. And Judson immediately was summoned up, and some of these men were told they had to go back to America. But in between, Judson offered to Baptists in the United States to serve as their missionary. Later on, Luther Rice would also become a Baptist because of poor health, returned to America, where his work and William Carey's urging resulted in the 1814 formation of the First National Baptist Denomination in the United States for foreign missions. So Luther Rice, by going back to America, was starting to stir people up in an interest in the work of these missionaries. Well, so while they're being persecuted and they're deciding to know where to go, the changes of views affected the situation of Judson in Calcutta, since it left them without support. At a great sacrifice of feeling, they had found themselves obliged to pursue a course which separated them as missionaries from the board on which they relied solely for support. Well, in the meantime, they had made two very good friends who were very charitable to them, knowing their respect for Adoniram's intellect and seriousness of study. They remained friends, but knew they couldn't work together the same way. And because they were being persecuted, they had to flee, and the only place open temporarily was the Isle of France. The East India Company did not want missionaries, for one, and especially American missionaries, because part of their way to make money is they had to keep the Hindu people in ignorance in India. But they got to the Isle of France, but there was only room for two to go at a time, and Samuel and Harriet Newell headed out first. And finally, Adoniram and Anne were able to get there, but through a lot of trouble. That when they first headed out, the authorities caught up to them, captured them. A vessel was then found about to proceed to the Isle of France, but they were forbidden to take passage in her. But they reasoned with the captain, please let us go. But after 7 weeks' sail, they were captured, that they were able to get permission to proceed. So after this 7 weeks, Judson reached the Isle of France in 1813, but Anne had found out about Harriet that she was giving birth to a son. And she had contracted some disease, and there was cold weather, and the infant succumbed, a daughter born to them, and it died. And then Harriet died, so they got there, and Samuel was mourning the loss of his young wife. And it was very difficult for Anne. Mr. Newell soon took his departure for Ceylon, so he left in the middle of March, and Mr. Rice sailed for America in the meantime with a double object of recruiting his own health, because he wasn't well, which was suffering from the effects of the climate, and then of awakening a deeper interest in mission among the Baptists of this country. The governor was indeed at present friendly in the area, but it was not certain how long the state of things would last, since the persecuting jealousy of the East India Company had followed them to this remote spot with a warning to the authorities to keep an eye on those American missionaries. This renewed assurance of hostility led Mr. Judson to fear lest he might receive similar orders, and he resolved to leave the place at the earliest opportunity, but they weren't sure where to go. And they had thought about different places that they could minister. And God was guiding them in all of this. There was only one place they could go. There was a ship that was leaving to Rangoon in Burma, the main port in Burma. In the meantime, William Carey knew about Adoniram's aspirations to go to Burma, and he warned him about going there, that nobody had ever had success as a missionary in Burma. His brother had already been there, not strictly as a missionary. And they had pretty much given up, but his brother had moved on to the capital because he had some talents that was interesting to the authorities in Burma. So there was no place to go but to Rangoon. Those who have since visited Rangoon under far more favorable circumstances cannot wonder that the hearts of the lonely young missionary sunk for a moment at the aspect of their future home. A more uninviting spot at first approach can perhaps hardly be found. It was a vast swamp-like level covered with wretched bamboo huts raised on poles, neglected, filthy, enlivened by a trace of European civilization. Such was Rangoon when the Judsons first looked upon it in June of the year 1813. To the influence of these repulsive outward features were added the gloomiest anticipations of the treatment they were likely to receive from its despotic and cruel government. So the king and Ava, the capital, was a despot. He was a cruel man. But it even got worse later on, because he passed away in 1819, and the person who took his place was even more cruel. And it just seemed like that first arrival there, with vermin crawling around in the area and the hot, the heat, And everything that they saw, their heart sunk, but they cast their cares upon Christ, and that's all that got them through. But they ended up finding the station that was occupied by William Carey's brother, and he wasn't there. His wife had remained behind. But they allowed him to have the mission house. He had but to enter the unoccupied apartments and prepare for his great work in the baptism of suffering and sorrow which awaited him, which we will get into in 2 weeks. Just a little description of the Burmans in the area. They have many bad traits of character. They are active, industrious, persevering, hospitable, says the biographer, and courteous to strangers, yet filthy, sensual, deceitful, crafty, and thievish, and when governed by rapacious rulers are cunning, false, and perjurious. The reason is there wasn't much ambition to grow food, take care of themselves, because anything that they got in abundance was going to be taken away from the government anyway. And so they resorted to lying. Lying was just a part of their character. They just seemed incapable of telling the truth to protect themselves, as they thought. Instead of the many objects of an American ambition and the increasing anxiety to amass property, the Burman sets a limit to his desires, and when that is reached, gives himself to repose and enjoyment. Instead of wearing himself out in endeavors to equal or surpass his neighbor in dress, food, furniture, or house, he easily attains the customary standard beyond which he seldom desires to go. He doesn't want to make anything of himself. What's the use? Because they're so oppressed. And if they gain, the government can take it away. It's a very difficult mission field. Judson's diary, May 11th, had more or less company from morning till night among the rest. Meng Sha U and two other or three others who appear to be pretty well satisfied that the Buddhist religion has no foundation. So people started to show an interest in what they were doing. And he created a Zion. And that is because these buildings were so common, he thought that if he could have something like that, it might draw people in. Originally, he had also dressed like the inhabitants around him, which that isn't unusual. Other missionaries had done the same, like Henry Martin. They dressed like the people around him, but he didn't see that that gained a desired effect. For more than 2 years after their arrival at Rangoon, Mr. Judson toiled without knowing definitely under whose patronage he was at work, but his peculiar and trying circumstances did not weaken his faith. He knew he had to master the Burman language, and it wasn't like any language of Asian countries around them. It was his own language that was so unique. And he had to start at the beginning. And the beginning might be that his teacher who was assisting him would point to something, say the name in that language, and Judson would have to learn a little at a time. So he strove to lay the foundation of a work which he could continue to advantage were it the will of God that he should remain in Burma. He acquainted himself with the condition of the country and its inhabitants and made some progress in the acquisition of their language. We say some progress, for it is exceedingly difficult to learn, and more than twice 2 years were necessary for one to acquire it perfectly. After studying it for 2 or 3 years, he wrote to the Reverend Lucius Bowles, "I just now begin to see my way forward in this language and hope that 2 or 3 years more will make it somewhat familiar, but I have met with difficulties that I had no idea of before I entered on the work." Well, with the surroundings, the heat, hardly a decent place to live, it's amazing that they persevered. Yet he would not back down. God had fitted him with the type of mind that he could learn this language. Such was the state of things when Mr. Judson went on the 5th of September 1815, 3 years and 5 days after he had written to Dr. Bowles, announcing his change of sentiments. He received the cheering intelligence that a Baptist missionary convention had been formed in the United States. So it took 3.5 years before he even found out that he had some support back home. It was 2 years after they arrived at Burma before they had any kind of communication at all from back home. They had to mark time so differently than we do here. It was a grueling process, and communication was quite difficult in those days. Well, to make matters worse, trial upon trial, on the 4th of May, 1816, Judson lost his firstborn, a boy about 8 months old. While it is hard for parents to part with children under any circumstances, it was peculiarly trying for these pioneer missionaries to give up their only child. The child's name was Roger Williams Judson. Because this baby was to them like a bright and newly risen star, the sole orb in their social sky, twinkling amid the gloom of moral darkness that surrounded them and irradiating their solitary Christian dwelling. When the light was quenched, a brief night of sorrow gathered over them. This is the second child they had lost. They had lost one in the boat that was born, stillborn, on their way to India. And then a new king came to the capital, and he had a reputation of being even more of a tyrant. And Judson concluded that it would be necessary, in order to his success, to visit the emperor at Amarapura. So he thought by visiting the emperor and letting them know what they were about, that maybe he could find enough favor that he wouldn't have to fear persecution. Well, there are others, for example, Francis Whalen, who taught at Brown University and wrote the official biography of Judson, which is 1,000 pages. 1853 thought that this probably wasn't a wise decision. They should have just labored where they were. But Adoniram believed that he should try to make their case known, and maybe there would be some tolerance. And the emperor received a petition, and he handed it back without saying a word and took a tract that Adoniram Judson had created. Our hearts now rose to God, he said, so they get to the emperor for a display of his grace. Oh, have mercy on Burma. Have mercy on her king, but alas, the time was not yet to come. So he was looking at this tract that Adoniram had created, read the first two sentences, which assert that there is one eternal God who is independent of the incidents of mortality, and that beside him there is no God. People of all other religions, full liberty to practice and worship according to their own customs. In regard to the objects of your petition, His Majesty gives no order. In fact, one source said he took the tract and he threw it on the ground and said, I don't have any use for this. So it wasn't a success. In the meantime, Anne had become very, very sick. And in those days, you did not have a 10-day supply of antibiotics that you could take. No, you had to go out on a boat to sea and hope that the salt water could refresh you. And she ended up going to Calcutta, and finally decided to go back to New York. And she arrived in Washington, and the Baptist General Convention had held a session in that city. A committee was appointed to confer with her respecting the Burman mission. So at her suggestion, several important measures were adopted. Her conversation and statements produced on the members of the convention the same effect which had resulted from her communication with other individuals since her arrival. She decided to publish a chronicle of their work in Burma called A History of the Burman Mission. It was published, the copyright of which she presented to the convention. And it had stirred up quite some interest. The Baptists were very, very stirred at what they were seeing. I hadn't mentioned this, but there is a magazine called The Christian Panoplist and Missionary Magazine, and I have a couple of first editions of this in my library, and I have one from the year 1812. And so much of what we knew, chronicled of missionary history in that time, was from what was published in that magazine, and mine from 1812 gives a communication of when the Judsons had first reached Calcutta. These words would get back and they'd be published in this missionary magazine. And now Anne was back home in America, letting these things be known, and it raised up the necessary funds. But she was gone for 2 years, and Adoniram did not even know when she would return. In fact, her return, she hadn't completely recovered from her sickness. By that time, she had already grown accustomed to the warmer climate, and the cold New England air was not helpful for her. But she got back, and to the surprise of Adoniram, who was so happy to see her, he doesn't even know she's coming back. I mean, the things that these people suffered, the things that they persevered through during that time, we can't wrap our minds around the lack of proper communication. Adoniram's trying to learn the language, which he never really got to learn well enough to publish any tracts or books and begin working on the New Testament in the Burman language. And he started with the Gospel of Matthew. It was a grueling process. In fact, after 12 years in Burma, they had a total of 18 converts. They never even had their first convert until 6 or 7 years after they had arrived there. But he had to master the language before they could communicate anything further. And this is what he persevered through. And not to have his wife with him for so long. And the first two of their children had passed away, and he labored without the help of his wife until the missionary society, at least interested in what was going on, appointed a man, George Howe, who had knowledge of printing, was sent to Burma to assist in the publishing of tracts. And finally, when the New Testament had been completed in the Burman language, published 500 copies of it. But there were a long way to go before they could even see revival. Revival wouldn't even come until 1831. And in the midst of this, there was great and grueling suffering that was coming in between. So Mrs. Judson had returned to Massachusetts early in the spring of 1823. Her health was but partially restored, and urgent solicitations were employed by her friends to induce her to remain in the country another year. They had tried to beg Anne, for the sake of her health, please stay with us another year, but her desire was to return to Burma. And it was so strong that she resisted every persuasion and prepared to take a second. And as she was persuaded, a final farewell of her friends and country. And so the next time that we meet together, just to whet your appetite, there was a man who came to Burma who was a Dr. Price, who was an Englishman who actually had some knowledge of eye surgery, which was very rare in those days. And somehow these type of things would be communicated to the emperor and the capital. And so Dr. Price was asked to come to the capital. They wanted his services there, and you didn't dare say no to this king. It could cost you your life. Well, he had no way to go there and communicate unless Adoniram had went with him. And so this was all leading to one thing, and that is that they wanted to establish a mission in the capital. But there was something going on in the background, and that was England was at war with Burma. And anybody that spoke English was looked at as suspect. And because Adoniram was receiving funds from the Missionary Society, the funds were processed through a bank in England, which was common. But because of the lack of communication, when the king got proof of this, to him it was proof that Adoniram and Dr. Price were spies, and they were placed within the death prison in Ava, but that's for 2 weeks from now, as next week I will, Lord willing, be in Louisville, and our goal is for Doug to teach Sunday school. But the more interesting part of this story is yet to come. There's a reason why his imprisonment is called one of the most depressing stories in the annals of missionary history. And God sustained him through 17 months imprisonment. And the other man who was there is a man whose name was Henry Gouger, who actually worked for the East India Company and wrote a book which helped me considerably when I was doing these studies in the past, called A History of 2 Years Imprisonment in a Burman Prison. And so when we meet again, I'll present what Gouger depicts as the inside of the prison, and what Anne communicates, because she's visiting the prison from the outside, in a lengthy letter to Elnathan, Adoniram's younger brother, who at this time wasn't even yet a Christian. And it is a harrowing, amazing story. But it's Gouger's command of the English language, his ability to communicate what goes through the mind when the next day you're not sure if you're going to be alive or put to death. And it was sometimes the method of how prisoners were dispatched that was so hard to contemplate. Because every day at 3 o'clock, one of these pale-faced prisoners would come into the prison, and they would take a prisoner with him, and that was a death sentence. But we'll talk about that, Lord willing, in our next time together, and with that I'll close our Sunday school.